This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
Well, finally, Dez Bryant has a new home, and it's in New Orleans. Dez agreed to a one-year deal with the Saints yesterday after working out for them a day earlier. He joins a Saints team that has won seven straight and has the second-best scoring offense in the NFL. But no Saints wide receiver, other than Michael Thomas, has more than 12 catches this season. Let's take a listen to Drew Brees on his team's new addition.
Dez has been a really good player in this league for a long time, and there is certainly a skill set that he has that is going to be beneficial, you know, and so I look forward to getting to work with him. I look forward to building a rapport with him. I look forward to getting him involved in this offense and just become a compliment to, you know, all the guys that we already have. I think he'll see that too when he gets here, and I'm sure he's been watching from afar as just, you know, how he'll integrate into this offense, and I think he'll be a great addition.
Okay, Shannon, how much better does Dez make New Orleans?
When you remember last year when the Steelers cut James Harrison and the Patriots picked him up, and we had a very similar question.
Yep.
I said, if he makes one play that gets them home field, he makes one play that helps them advance.
That's a good point. Yep.
It's a great signing.
Yep.
They're not bringing Dez Bryant on to catch 5-6 passes a game, have 6-7 touchdowns in a 7 game. That's not what he's there for. Mm-hmm. Joining this team, he's the third option at best. Michael Thomas, Kamara, he might be fourth behind Tre'Quan Smith.
He might be.
So with that being said, how much he just has to make a play. Remember big play, Shay? Just one play, get one play a game. If he can get in one play, then now all of a sudden they're home for the entirety of the playoffs. He makes one play that helps them advance. Great signing. Great signing. So for me, how much does he help? I don't know. I thought he looked heavy in the video.
Yep.
It's reported that they asked him to lose another 5 pounds, which means they want him to lose around 10 to 12 pounds, Skip. But can he help? And I guess one of the receivers just went on IR. So basically, they need him more now than probably they ever had because they're going to be down to 3 receivers. Mm-hmm. So not only do they need the body, they needed someone that's played in big games before and has stepped up and made plays.
Yep.
So how much, if they get home field, he makes a play that helps them get home field, he makes a play that helps them advance, great signing.
Okay. I accept that, and I agree with that. First of all, before I say what I'm going to say, from my heart, I am happy for Dez Bryant because I believe he was in danger of being done.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he was in danger of being kept permanently on his couch by the NFL. And it was going to be a sad end to what used to be a great story in Dallas, because we both agreed there was that stretch, 12, 13, and 14. I thought he was the best receiver in football.
Yeah.
And I'm not being a hypocrite, but I used to throw up the X.
Yeah.
Because he deserved it. He earned it. He was the X. He was the spirit of the Dallas Cowboys offense with Tony Romo as the quarterback.
Right.
Obviously, I thought he just ruined Dez last year. I mean, ruined Dak last year because he was pretty much ruined as a receiver. I thought he's a broken down shell of himself.
Right.
And he led the league in drop balls last year. So, as a Cowboy fan, I'll take Amari Cooper right now any day or any night over Dez Bryant. I'm happy to go forward with Amari Cooper.
Okay.
I do not fear Dez Bryant on November 29th at Jerry World. It's a Thursday night game, and it's going to be a spectacle.
He said it's personal.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'm glad he's saying that because he's going to come in over-amped, just spilling over with bad blood, trying to get even with Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and all those Cowboy fans who attack me on Twitter. You know how he's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be out of his mind. And I'm going to put the over-under on Dez drops that night at 3, and I'll probably probably take the over on that.
Now, you remember, Skip, maybe it was Hard Knocks or something, the Cowboys, and Dez went to every one of their DBs. You can't guard me. You can't guard me. You can't guard me. You can't guard me. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of those guys that he said they couldn't guard him might be still on that roster. So he feels very comfortable, like, oh, you couldn't guard me when you knew exactly what I was doing. Because, Skip, after you played with a guy, you know, being on the same team for a number of years, they know tendencies. They know plays. So now I'm in a different system. If you couldn't guard me when you knew what I was going to do, you can't guard me now. I believe Dez will be on his best behavior. But here's the thing, Skip. Drew Brees lives in a world that you don't complete 70%, 76% of your passes by throwing the ball up and hoping someone comes down with it.
No.
You throw the ball knowing that guy's going to be where he's supposed to be.
Yep.
So that's what's going to be asked of Dez. Now, I don't know how many times that he's run precision routes, because he loved Tony Romo, because Tony Romo would throw it up and says, I believe in more in Dez than the guy that's going against him will come down with this ball.
That is true.
And he gave him opportunities. Well, they didn't coach Dak like that, Skip. Dak. Mm-hmm. They didn't coach him like that. They said, look, we're good enough. If he's open, throw it. But none of this 50-50 stuff. And it worked. That's why you saw 4 interceptions his rookie year. But once Tony Romo went away, wasn't coming back, well, given we still believe in Dez. Mm-hmm. And you see his interceptions started to creep up because he was giving Dez opportunities that Dez shouldn't have been afforded at that juncture of his career.
Correct. So as a Cowboy fan, I'm still hanging on as a Cowboy fan, barely, on November 29th at Jerry World, I'm going to fear Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, but I'm not going to fear Dez Bryant.
You know they're going to give him opportunities. You know that.
You know Sean Payton will give him opportunities.
Exactly.
Sure. And that brings me to my point. I still think this was a good move for Sean Payton. He is a showman. Mm-hmm. He likes star power. He likes box office. Mm-hmm. He likes mystique. He likes presence. He likes reputation. On reputation alone, I think Dez Bryant was a good signing for a team that somehow got to 7-1 without him, but he could be a little bit of icing on top of that cake that's just about baking here. It's just about baked. And if nothing else, if at worst case he's just a famous decoy for them, then I think it's a good signing for them, because I still cannot get through my head how Michael Thomas is second in this league in receptions when there's been no secondary receiver except for Kamara coming out of the backfield and occasionally lining up in the slot.
I think that goes to show you just how creative, and Drew Brees mentions that, how imaginative this offense is.
Well, for that one guy, it is. I don't know how they do that.
But you know what they do, Skip? If you look at the guys that catch a lot of passes, they can line up anywhere. They line them up in the slot. They put him on the left. They put him on the right. They put him in motion. They do a lot of things. You can't – they're only Marvin Harrison, because basically Marvin just used to line up on the right, and Peyton said – caught 143 passes, basically lined up in one position.
He did.
But now the guys, you look at the Julios, the ABs, the guys that catch a lot of passes, the Adam Thielens, they move them around.
Okay.
Because, Skip, if you just line up in one place, okay, I'm gonna take, I can take you away if you just line up on the right or you just line up in the slot exclusively.
Okay. So did Wade Phillips, who you know very well, last week, did he go into that game saying, let's just let Michael Thomas have his, and we'll just shut down the rest of them, and we'll win the football game? Because Michael Thomas got his.
He went. But then they let Kamara get 3 touchdowns, and then let Ben Watson get off. But see, that's the brilliance of Coach Belichick.
Yep.
Coach Belichick goes into the game and says, we're going to take Devontae Adams away.
Always. And he just says, you can't have that. Okay. That's the one thing I love about Belichick. You can't have that.
He's not going to let you beat him with
his Bill
with
Belichick
best.
Against this team, he would take away Michael Thomas.
But
if it took 3 defenders to take him away.
But then what happened? Jimmy Graham started going a little bit. They said, now we're going to take Jimmy away.
Yeah.
And then Scantlin, he got going and said, now we're going to take him away. To be able to do that on the fly. Because a lot of times, Skip, you go into a game, we're going to take a guy away. We practice it.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to play combo coverage here. We're going to play bracket there. We're going to lock it over here. But this is how we're going to get to it. In the game, you draw it up on the blackboard. You have to have guys that are smart enough to say, okay, let's go.
Yep.
So, and Dez got to learn new terminology, Skip. Now, the routes are going to be the same. When I went to Baltimore, I had heard 2 jet flanker drive and why bingo pick. Now the routes mean something different. A short cross in Denver is a wall route in Baltimore.
Yep.
A 7 or a corner route in Denver is called Chevy. in Baltimore. So now, Skip, how do I get that? Now, remember.
That's you. This is Dez.
I had OTAs.
Big difference.
I had OTAs. Okay. Yep. I had minicamp.
They're going to have to simplify this like crazy. They're going to have to give him two or three simple routes that he can digest quickly.
Give it to him like they gave Josh Gordon. Yep. Now you see they expanded. They tagged the first couple of games, they tagged it. Josh, this, run a comeback. Yep. Josh, run a slant. Josh, run an end cut. As he started to get more familiar with the verbiage and the terminology, now we can expand. You see his role expand. You see his production expand.
Trust me on this. Josh Gordon has a much higher football IQ than Dez does. He just does. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm not trying to insult Dez. I just know the two and I know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. Josh Gordon has high football IQ. He has high off the field.
Well, you got to play in that offense. Yep. And I think in Sean Payton's offense is very similar. You're going to have to be smart. Because when there's a lot of verbiage and there's a lot, and you have to learn multiple positions. That's the thing, Skip, because Mike forced us to learn multiple positions. Because what happens if someone gets hurt? Now, there's a backup, but he would feel more comfortable putting Rod at the X and maybe shifting, bringing somebody, instead of bringing someone that plays that position behind Ed, put Rod there and then let somebody play Rod's position. Or move me over there.
I got it. So this is the one coach in the National Football League who is a watch this coach. Mm-hmm. Like, watch what I can do when nobody else wanted to even try this. Watch how I can recreate Dez Bryant. I can reinvent him. I can rejuvenate him. Mm-hmm. That's what they will try to do on the fly with simple game plans just for Dez.
Yes.
And hope that he could catch that one or two balls that could make a difference. Will he make a big difference? My takeaway from all, my bottom line to this is, I don't think he'll make them that much better, but he will not make them any worse. Mm. That's.
I tell you what this coach also is. He ain't about that BS.
Yeah.
Now, well, that's, if you think you're going to stomp your feet because you didn't get a pass, you're going to get upset because Drew Brees missed you, and you're going to come to the sidelines, you do that once.
And you'll be right back on your couch.
Right. Because there's no harm in this, Skip. His money's not guaranteed. Mm-mm. So basically, he get paid weekly. Mm. You show up, you got a job.
Yep.
You don't show up, you don't have a job. Well, so it's as simple as that.
He's in a great spot. He's blessed, man, because he could go along for a great ride here.
I don't want people to get upset. See, Dez could have done that in Dallas.
Nope. No,
he couldn't because Sean Payton ain't calling plays in Dallas and Drew Brees isn't the quarterback.
That is correct.
So, no, he can't.
Mm-hmm. Nothing to lose. Whether he is a weapon or a decoy, I guess we'll have to see. Do you think he'll talk less? Do you think he'll be off social media? He knows he's
That's
being watched.
That's a good question.
I don't know about off social media, but I know he won't have those antics, those histrionics that we're used to seeing on the sidelines, those outbursts. Mm-hmm. Nah, I feel very comfortable to say it.
Okay. No mercy. Well, another athlete that we are hearing plenty from is Eagles offensive lineman Jason Kelce, who didn't hold back after the Super Bowl when he called the Patriots a, quote, fear-based organization. Now his target is the Cowboys, who Philly will face on Sunday. Kelce called out the Cowboys and their fans yesterday. Let's take a listen.
Everything's heightened. I would say mostly I just don't think that a lot of players, in particular me, just don't really like the franchise or the organization, what it stands for, what it's always stood for. Just never really appreciated what the organization and what its fans really stood for, you know.
Nice.
A lot of fair weather people from across the country that just kind of fell in love because they're winners instead of having any type of emotional connection to the team whatsoever.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear what Skip has to say, but I want to go with Shannon first. You can think about this one. What do you make of Kelce's comments?
What's the point? Okay, we know this is a division opponent. We know there's no love lost between the Eagles and the Cowboys. But let me tell you what this is about, Skip. This is about, for the longest time, the Eagles have been known for two things. They're known for the team that's in the NFC East that had no Super Bowls. They were the little brothers. They were the doormat.
Mm-hmm.
And their fans booed Santa.
Yep.
That's what the Eagles were known for. Mm-hmm. Everyone else in that division had three or more Super Bowls. And people still talk about those teams in higher regards than the Eagles, although the Eagles are the last team to win a Super Bowl from that division.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. You don't like the team, Skip? Hey, having an intense rival, I played with the Steelers and I played in Denver. I mean, played with the Ravens and we hated the Steelers.
Hmm.
Played in Denver, we hated the Raiders and we hated the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. We knew we had Raider week. But Skip, I didn't every week. I didn't every time we play them have to, man, I hate the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Oh, they fans are fans. I don't care nothing about the fans. I don't even care if they show up. Forget them fans. Everybody fans, Let me say everybody. And some fans are more unruly or obnoxious than others. Cowboy fans, Patriots fans, Packers fans, Steelers fans. Patriots more so since 2001, because I remember the time the Patriots, and you remember that too, they weren't very good, and you could, I mean, they're only like 10 fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. But normally when your team wins, Skip, the fans get used to winning, and they, y'all terrible, blah, 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 blah. Like the Packers, mm-hmm. Title Town, the Steelers, 6 Super Bowls, the Cowboys, 5 Super Bowls. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what these millennials are talking about. They hadn't won in a very long time, Skip. I don't even know why you on them. You should have been left ship. Mm. But anyway, Skip, I don't get that. Why are they still talking about? I don't get Jason Kelce. I don't get Jason Peters. Okay, they're the Cowboys. And yes, they're America's team. And I don't know how you get to be America's team. But it happened. Mm-hmm. In the 60s when they got the coin to term, maybe it was in the 70s.
70, it wasn't until 79.
Yeah, because okay. In the 60s they were terrible. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a little while.
No, all the 60s, they were terrible.
They were terrible. They got an NFL championship game.
Once. Okay. But anyway, they lost. Told Coach Ledger, I know this. They're not in the 70s, Skip. They had a little powwow. Mm-hmm. But it all ended on the catch. Mm-hmm. Once the catch happened, went down the hill in the 80s. Right. And then the 90s, they rolling again. Mm-hmm. But what I don't understand, Skip, Jason Kelce never said anything about this in 2014. Mm. He didn't say the Cowboys were terrible and all this and all that. He didn't say nothing. He didn't say nothing like this in 2016. Mm-hmm. Now they're facing a little hardship. Now he come out, mm-hmm. Eagles, boy, we hard, no, we blue collar, everybody blue. Stop it. You get an opportunity on Sunday to put your hatred on display, mm-hmm. and go ahead and smash him, which I expect you to do. But enough of this talking.
Everything Jason Kelce said yesterday embodies, just enhances why I despise everything about the Philadelphia Eagles, and I have my entire life, because I have despised this franchise since I became a Cowboy fan in 1961. And just to be clear about this, within this division, the New York Giants, I respect, because they've always been about class and character, and there's never been a big incident between Cowboys and Giants. It's a very respectful rivalry. I do not like the arch-rival Washington Redskins, but I don't hate them.
Right.
I don't disrespect them. Okay. I have nothing but sometimes fear and respect to the Washington Redskins. I have no respect for the Philadelphia Eagles, because to your point, the Philadelphia Eagles have been a longtime doormat of this division and a laughingstock of this division. And every time they get on a little bit of a roll, they're a bunch of front-running chess feeders who get too full of themselves too quickly and fall right on their faces. There is no way Jason Kelce would have spoken out yesterday if my team hadn't fallen on its face on Monday Night Football.
You're probably right.
That was the biggest egg under the circumstance my team has ever laid in my long history of rooting and trying to support my team. I told you I came in here Monday. I'm done, man. I'm out. That was the turning point of the 2018 season. And Jason Kelce knows this, so he's front-running, and he's trying to stomp on what looks like their grave right now. And again, even his points are wrong-headed, because the first point is he's actually talking about this franchise, this organization that he hated, because it's what they always stood for. It goes back to the lockout. We're going back to 1987 when the Dallas Cowboys were run by the great Texas E. Schramm. Tex Schramm, do you remember him?
I do.
Because most players in that era thought Tex Schramm was actually the behind the curtains commissioner of the league.
Right.
That he ran the league. And I covered him, and he did run the league.
Right.
So again, did he break the union, the players union in 19? Yeah, because all the Cowboys walked the picket line.
And the great
Tony Dorsett, Too Tall Jones, Randy White, Danny White. They just walked the picket line. Yep. And again, they played on a Monday night game that was televised. It was on Monday Night Football against Joe Gibbs, who actually beat them with replacement players at Texas Stadium. That was a low point for me as a Cowboy fan.
Yep.
But the point is, he's trying to lump that organization into the Jerry organization. Jerry Jones is the opposite of Tex Schramm. Jerry Jones, I know Mark Cuban owns the Dallas Mavericks, but the ultimate Dallas Maverick is Jerry Jones. He is anti-establishment. Yeah. He is against the grain. He is anti-league. He's everything that Jason Kelce should love about having that fighting spirit against the league, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So and then he talks about a lot of fair weather people from across the country just kind of fell in love because they're winners. The Cowboys, my team hasn't won a Super Bowl or been to Super Bowl in 23 years. So he's talking about a lot of old people, right?
Yes.
And again, I meet when we take the show on the road, I meet a lot of younger people like in their 20s who wear in Cowboys jerseys,
right,
like in Cleveland maybe.
Sure. Right.
And I say, well, what is that? Like LeBron, right?
Yes.
He's a product of this.
Correct.
And I always say, what happened? What inspired this? And I just love the jersey. When I was a little kid, I saw it, loved the color on television.
What about the guy at the security that we walk past every day? Derek.
He's
from New York.
Loves him.
And I said, hold on, bro. How you jump over the Giants, past the Falcons and the Saints and all these teams in between to land in Dallas?
That had a lot to do with the 90s, I think. 92, 93, yeah. 94, 95.
But he ain't that young.
No, he's not that young. But I think that's what won.
Yeah,
but
see, that goes to Kelsey's point. See, when they were winning, everybody wanted to jump on the bandwagon. But
this is new now. This is a whole different era. And again, it has a lot to do with the uniforms, but you can't tell me that people still hang on to the Cowboys because they're winners, because
they
haven't been winners. So I don't know where he's going with that. And yet, trust me, when you talk about unruly fans, there's only one place, and I went to a bunch of games at what used to be called the Vet, Veteran Stadium in Philadelphia.
Terrible field.
And it was a terrible field and a terrible bunch of fans because they not only booed Santa Claus, they booed Michael Irvin when he had a career-ending injury, a back injury, and he's lying prone on the field, and they are cheering that injury, right?
There's no love lost between the Eagles because Buddy put the bounty out on the kicker.
He did. And in my days of covering the Cowboys back, let's do the 90s, 80s, the people who ran the Cowboy tours would always tell if they took a group of people to Philadelphia, as long as they were going to Washington or New York, no problem. Any other place, no problem. But when Philadelphia, they had one rule. You cannot wear Cowboy paraphernalia into those stands because them is fighting words.
Yep.
Wow.
Somebody's going to want to fight you because they're
going
to get drunk, they're going to get crazy.
And if they're losing?
Oh, you better be careful.
It's because you had that Cowboy jersey on and they're going to want to fight. But...
Look, I don't want to stereotype all the Philly fans because I'm sure there's some great ones and some classy ones. But to me, as a group, they are the least classy fans in the National Football League. And Jason Kelce represents them. So congratulations on that.
Well, I mean, look, Skip, the Eagles are on the perch. They're the Super Bowl champs. The Cowboys are right now on a little some lean time. They've fallen. They lost the last two ball games. And so, they're easy picking. Mm-hmm. That's low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all just Jason Kelce. But okay, now, you got to play this game on Sunday. You're doing all this bumping them gums. Mm-hmm. You got to play on Sunday.
They all bump their gums.
So we going to see. Yeah. I'm going to be watching it, too. We got a case on that. We got a case.
We got no case.
Oh, whoa. Time out.
You want Dallas? Yeah, I'll give you Dallas.
No, you don't better get your team, remember? Because I tried to get a better.
He said that yesterday.
I wrote off 2018.
No,
you want them?
No.
You can have them.
Why would I want them?
Well, I don't know.
I would like for them to go on a nice little win streak. Because, see, if they lose their next two or three games, we know they're out of the playoffs. See, I want to get that momentum built back up because there's nothing like when you like something's going to happen and then, man, a dead president with Rev came in that thing and he sat down on his couch and like, Skip, if they win like three or four games, you will come in here.
Shannon
How
Sharp,
about them Cowboys?
I already decreed on Tuesday morning they are out of the playoffs.
They
it
might
is
win four
over
straight.
And out.
They win four straight. They're right back in this thing.
At Philly, at Atlanta, Washington, New Orleans, Philadelphia.
No!
They're going to win those games?
Wait a minute. They got the guy that had the third best and the fourth best QBR the last two, three
got
years.
Got rid of the jersey.
He got the white one. He still got the white
true.
One.
He still got the white one.
Exactly. That's the most prestigious one.
We'll see if it comes
Yeah,
back.
I know.
We'll see.
You think you're slick.
No mercy.
Our next guest spent 2.5 years as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He was let go last week after a 2-5-1 start to the season. And Hugh Jackson, welcome to Undisputed.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. Yeah, appreciate you joining us. Last week you mentioned wanting to possibly be an offensive coordinator again. So what is next for you?
Well, I think that's what's next. You know, I think you got to take a step back. The first thing I've done is just tried to process all of this that's happened over the last couple of weeks. And when I look back, Take the things that are good and make sure you move on from the things that are bad. But the one thing I know I can do is go coordinate offensive football teams in the National Football League. I've done that and kind of go from there.
I agree with that, and I think you'd be great at that, and that was always your strength, and I'm not sure you got to use enough of your strength, especially play calling in as a head coach. So let's start from the start. Let's go back two seasons ago to set the stage for what began to unfold, the Myles Garrett draft.
Mm-hmm.
How much input, how much of a vote did you have in which way to go in that first round?
Oh, I did. We were a collaborative group. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked through it as an organization. Made a decision to take Miles, which we truly believe was the right decision.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because
no
you
doubt.
Loved a couple of quarterbacks.
Oh, no, I did like some quarterbacks, but I thought Miles was a generational player. I think he was a cornerstone player for the organization. At the time, there was a need at both positions, but when you looked at the draft and the players, I thought Miles was the best player.
Mm. Between Deshaun and Mahomes, which way would you have leaned?
I like them both.
All right.
I thought both of them were outstanding players. Obviously, Patrick's having an outstanding season this year, and so is Deshaun. They're both playing really well for their football teams. They both have some skill sets that translate into the National Football League. Patrick can really throw it. Deshaun can throw it, and he uses his legs extremely well. So I think both of those guys are obviously proving out that they are worthy of the draft status that they had.
Okay, so in hindsight, I was bullish, as Shannon knows, on Deshaun. I thought Cleveland should have taken Deshaun and would forever regret not taking him. Do you look back and regret that at all? Would that have changed your life?
I don't, to look back, hindsight's always 20/20, but when you're in it, you know, you don't get a chance to look back. I think obviously getting the offense to a situation where it was playing better, being an offensive head coach was important, but my whole vision was about the division. How do we win the division? What was going to be best for our football teams? And I knew if you couldn't stop the Ben Roethlisbergers, the Joe Flaccos, the Andy Daltons of the world and stop those receivers, that our chances of winning probably wasn't going to be very good.
Mm.
But you mentioned and you said you believe Myles Garrett was a generational player.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Hugh, in order to win championships, you got to have that quarterback.
You're right, Shannon. There's no question about that. And I, you know, again, it's all how you see it, mm-hmm. you know, as an organization. How much time are you going to take to make those choices and decisions? You know, you said, when I look back at it now, do you wish you could change it? Probably so. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you're in it, it's definitely the best decision.
Hmm. So how much input and vote did you have on this year's quarterback decision?
A ton. You know, Baker Mayfield is the right guy in the right time for the Cleveland Browns.
So how close were you on Sam Darnold? Was it a hard choice?
Oh, no doubt it was. Yeah. I mean, both of those guys are going to be outstanding players. But when I evaluated Baker, when I saw his internal strength, his ability to get people to play above and beyond the way they play, and just his internal belief on that he has this will to win, mm-hmm. and you combine that with his accuracy and arm talent and his performances in big games, and you knew that this guy had it.
And John Dorsey was there with you on that?
No doubt.
And was Jimmy Haslam with you on that? Because he attended the pro day that Sam put on here at
USC. Yeah, he did. We were all, we went around. I thought that was one thing we did a great job of. We went around to go see all those guys personally. Mm-hmm. And spend time with him and watch him work out and watch him.
Was throw. Mr. Haslam leaning Darnold at that point? That's what was reported.
No, I don't. You know, again, I can't. Wherever that report came from, I did not know that. We made a decision as an organization collectively to take Baker Mayfield, and that was the right decision, no question.
Okay. So I have said this, as Shannon will attest many times on the show. I have always defended and supported you as an offensive mind, play caller, even as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But you lost me during the Hard Knocks episodes over the scene in which you called in Baker and Drew Stanton and you informed Baker that he had won the backup job. And mm-hmm. it seemed like from the start you were not giving him any chance to compete at all for the starting job with Tyrod. So can you background me on that? Can you explain how that all unfolded and why Baker didn't even get a chance from the start?
Absolutely. We made a commitment to Tyrod Taylor when we brought him in, that he was going to be the starter. And I thought we needed to get him up and running in the offense. We had a new offensive coordinator, new system. And when you make that commitment in front of your football team and everybody else, you have to support that. If Baker Mayfield was going to become the starting quarterback, it was going to show itself out. you know, over time. It wasn't about if he was with the first unit, the second unit, the third unit. The talent was going to show itself in time. And so I wasn't concerned about that. We had a football team, as you mentioned, that was coming off an 0-16 season. So they needed to know who the leader was. And the one thing I always do with my players, I'm very honest and upfront. So I brought those two guys in to be honest and upfront and tell them exactly.
Drew and Baker.
Yes, okay. To tell them exactly how we were going to go about it. And I think that's what you do. I think all players want honesty from the head coach. They want to know the direction, exactly how it's going to go. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This is how we're going to do it. And that's what that was about.
So I'm a Baker guy, and it just was a little offensive to me that you relegated him to having to sit before the cameras. And you informed him as the first overall pick, congratulations, you've won the backup job over Drew Stanton. And it just seemed a little beneath him to have to sit through that. But he took it. Mm-hmm. And was it for the cameras that you would do that?
I don't think, you know, sometimes, and I'll take full responsibility for that. There's sometimes I can tell the cameras to be off. Mm-hmm. And it might have been a time where I wanted them off and there wasn't. There hasn't been any other many scenes other than when we let players go. You know, where there was those kind of conversations that were had.
Would you have liked to have the cameras off?
Oh, absolutely. You like to have it back because I don't want people. I mean, it's all optics at the end of the day. You know, I'm going to do what I feel I need to do for a football team and be honest and upfront. And that's what I did. And it wasn't to put, you know, Baker down or to put Drew down. It was to do what I felt was right for a football team and being honest and upfront.
And Baker didn't complain about it that I know of.
No, it's never been an issue at all.
You look at Tyrod. You could have won the first game against the Steelers and missed a field goal. And then in New Orleans, you missed two field goals, two PATs, and then the robbery game at Oakland. So if you – let's just
say – That was Baker, though.
Yeah, well, but I'm just saying. But if you, the first two games, let's just say you win both of those games. Are you sitting here today?
No question. You know, I'm sitting here today because I didn't win enough football games. You know, at the end of the day, that's what it is. And I have to respect the decision that the organization made. But you said it. I mean, we had games, and the one thing I regret is I wasn't able to get our team to finish those games in overtime and make the kicks or make sure that we made enough plays, you know, offensively to put us in a better position so we would have a better record. And, again, that's what happens in these situations. Mm.
So Hard Knocks has become a powerful vehicle, and it can be beneficial for a team or it can start to tear it apart from inside out.
Right.
How threatened were you by the fact that you had two coordinators who have big personalities and they were both former head coaches and the cameras started to love both of them, maybe to a fault?
Not at all. I mean, I hired both of those guys.
You did?
I hired Todd and I hired Greg. And I don't think I ever never have been caught up in what people think or say. And again, I mean, like I said, that's the optics. I mean, I'm not a person that's weak or insecure by any stretch of the imagination. If I was, I never would have put those guys on my staff to begin with. Right. So I know who they are. But at the same time, I think sometimes, you know, the audience seen certain clips of things that were going on. And so they thought, well, maybe there was never a conversation prior to, or this is the way it is until you see the whole thing and was there to see how some of those conversations went. I think we would feel different about them.
But you mentioned in the article that you did with Mary Kay Cabot that you wanted to convince Jimmy Haslam to let you take over the play calling. But that's what you do, Hugh. Mm-hmm. If you look at some of the great offensive mind that are head coaches, the Sean McVay, the Kyle Shanahans, Andy Reid, they're head coaches, but they also call plays.
Right.
If you're so good at that, why would you relinquish that role?
Well, I think when you look back when you're 1-15 on 16, you know, again, I came to Cleveland as one of the offensive play callers of the year.
Right.
And I think that was hard. I wasn't able to get the offense up and going the way I wanted to. Doesn't matter why. When you look at it, I thought it was time, along with a conversation that we had within the organization, to move forward and make me more of the CEO type within the organization, coach the whole football team. I signed off on it. I hired a coordinator, and then I needed to allow him to do his job.
Right.
You know, I gave him total autonomy of the offense, and I watched. And I got to a point, just like you're saying, where I thought there were things that wasn't being corrected that I needed to fix in order to get this train rolling in the right direction, and that's where I was headed. And again, in hindsight, that's something, as you just mentioned, you don't want to do. I'd rather bet on myself in the future than bet on somebody else.
So, go ahead.
Good. But to follow that up, you mentioned you were 1-15, you were 0-16.
Yes.
You didn't have the quarterback or the skill position around him. Mm-hmm. So now you get that, and when you get this, now you give it up, Hugh?
You're right.
You finally get the ingredients make the dish the way you want it, and now you're going to turn that cooking over to someone else.
No doubt, and that's what I said. I mean, I can't fault anybody for that but myself. You know, I made that choice and decision. And again, I like the personalities that I brought into the organization. I thought if we were going to change the narrative, we needed people who had been successful offensively and defensively. Again, people got tired of seeing what we were trying to make on offense.
Right.
And I figured we needed a new strategy. I chose that, and I lost. At the end of the day, you know, that's what it is. I didn't get it done.
So you began to have some issues with Todd Haley, but I'm going to hold that question for a moment so that we can take a break.
No mercy.
All right, welcome back to Undisputed. Former Browns coach Hugh Jackson still with us. And Skip, I'm going to let you pick up where you left off.
So when Jimmy Haslam decided to let you go and, in a shock to me, Todd Haley go at the same time, he said, we will not have discord within this organization. In your view, what caused the discord?
I don't think what Jimmy was saying was internal discord with the staff. I don't, you know, again, you would have to ask Jimmy. He would have to answer that. But I think what Jimmy was really trying to convey is that, you know, we got this young quarterback. He's not trending forward. He's not doing anything better. So let's do everything we can to put him in the best position to be successful. And when you look at it, you know, again, as I said earlier, it's not a decision that I agree with when it came to me, but that's the decision the organization made, so I have to move on from it.
Was there any certain thing you clashed over? I think you wanted to start the undrafted free agent rookie at left tackle, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think those decisions we made together. I don't, the issues that that people think that happen are normal, everyday issues between coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, you have disagreements all the time about the way you want to run a particular play or who's going to play in this particular situation. So I was a little shocked that, you know, it came out as just internal discord. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had disagreements with Greg Williams about defense.
I'm
disagreements about with Amos Jones about special teams. You know, I think any time it's two strong personalities and it's about offense, something that Todd is really good at, that's what's built his reputation. And myself, I mean, I had the job because I could coach offense. I think it gets blown out a little bit more than what it was. So I get it. That's what people say think it is, but I don't think it was just internal discord.
How much did you go back to Oklahoma and try to get some of the things that Baker did from that playbook at Oklahoma? Did you sit down and talk to Lincoln Riley and says, okay, you did this, and he was very, very good at it. How much did you take from Oklahoma OU playbook?
You know, Shannon, I never did those things because in Cleveland, in our video department, we have everything Baker's done.
Okay.
You know, and any time you draft a guy, as you know, you do all that extensive homework on him. So I had at my disposal every play that Baker had. So I went myself and picked out concepts that I thought that would fit him based on what he did. And I remember asking Baker, tell me a few things, write down a few things for me on paper, which he did, which I passed along to the staff.
Right.
Because I think that's what's important. We needed him to take ownership
of
it to be the best he could be. So there's all kind of ways of doing this. That's just the way I chose to do it.
So during Hard Knocks, you recruited Dez Bryant, and then all of a sudden, it went nowhere. What happened? He just signed with the Saints, by the way.
Congratulations to him. I mean, obviously, you know, it's got to fit on both sides. And I think Dez Bryant's going to go do great things for the Saints. But at that time where we were, it just wasn't the right fit.
So that was your choice, not his.
I think it was our choice. I think together, you know, for what we needed at the time and where we were and where he was, it just didn't work out at that time.
And what happened with Josh Gordon, who Tom Brady has turned into a pretty good, it's Tom's favorite target now.
Absolutely. I mean, we know what type of talent Josh Gordon is. And sometimes I think players need different sceneries, you know, in order to be all they can be. You know, everything that this young man had dealt with had been in Cleveland. You know, that's all he knew. So I think he's in a place and a better place for him professionally, emotionally, mentally. And I think you're starting to see the real Josh Gordon, and I wish him well.
Was that your choice to cut ties with him?
We made a decision as an organization just to move forward.
Because of what happened on that Saturday when he had an appearance and then had a hamstring?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously that's internal business, and I'll keep it at that. But we made a decision that we truly felt was best for the organization to move forward, and it was the right thing to do for the young man and for the organization.
You had waited patiently so long on Josh. You guys have stuck by him. failed test, suspension, suspension. So to get to this point, after being in his corner for so long, it had to be hard to move on.
Yes, it was hard, you know, but I think we as an organization made a decision that we felt that anything that we thought was going to stop us or hinder us from being the best version of an organization and football team that we could be, that we would move forward. And that's what we did.
How much do you think it's hurt Baker's development not to have Josh Gordon? Then he lost Higgins and Willis and various receivers. Has he been a little handicapped?
Absolutely. Anytime you lose some of the more talented players on your team when you're playing, it's hard, especially when you're a rookie player. You know, obviously Jarvis Landry is doing some good things for him, and Jarvis is a tremendous competitor and player. But at the same time, you want to make sure your quarterback has all the options that he can have, you know. So did it hurt a little bit? I'm sure it did, you know. But Baker is such a competitor. You know, he's going to look to find a way to overcome it. And I think he's learning in the National Football League. You do need all the guys at your disposal in order to have success.
Mm-hmm. How good can he be?
I think he's going to be really good. I really believe he is. I think he has all the characteristics that you need. I think I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think the key's got to be him. Everything you do from here on in is about Baker Mayfield. How do you make him the best version of himself as a player? How do you create the environment, you know, around the organization for him so that he can lead at all times? And then I think you will see all the characteristics that I mentioned earlier will show itself. Hmm. I think he's going to be really good.
What does he have to, number one, correct in what he does?
I think the biggest thing for Baker that he's learning that these guys in the National Football League can run. Hmm. You know, when you take out outside the pocket, you know, and they hit pretty hard. You know, they're not just trying to be nice to you. You know, and I think he's learning that there's a time to throw the ball away and there's a time to go make that special play. And I think once he masters that, I think the sky's the limit for him. Mm.
The arm talent is what you thought it would be?
It's better than what I thought. Yep. No doubt. Mm. He can throw the ball with anybody.
Mm. Wow. All right. Well, thank you for being here, Hugh. Really interesting. And we wish you the
well
best
done.
With your next
thank
move.
You. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for being here. No mercy. College basketball is back, and Duke is looking real good. Fourth-ranked Blue Devils blew out number 2 Kentucky last night by 34. Duke has one of the most hyped freshman classes of all time, and Zion Williamson is a big reason why. Last night, Zion had 28 points, 7 rebounds in his college debut and only missed 2 shots. Not a bad way to start. Shannon, how good will he be in the NBA?
Well, he showed us a lot last night, Skip. When watching him in high school, all you saw was dunks and layups. And so I was like, okay, can the guy shoot? He only shot 1 3, first shot of the night. He made it.
Made it.
But this is the evolution of the NBA. Mm-hmm. The big guy that just constantly plays with his back to the basket, mm-hmm. those are eyesores, those are dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Look at all the bigs, the Embiids, the Anthony Davis, DeAndre Ayton, Mo, but all the bigs get not shoot threes. So he showed you that he's having range, he's improving that. Mm-hmm. I have a concern though. Skip, he's 17 years, he's 18 years of age. He's 285 pounds at 18.
Yep. Oof.
Is he going to be 285, 275 at 25? Because when I saw him in high school, I said he's left-handed. I said he reminds me of a way, way more athletic Zach Randolph. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought he was. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, Z-Bo shot a couple of threes later in his career.
He did.
But Z-Bo was never this athletic. Mm-mm. What concerns me, Skip, is that just his size. I'm concerned that is he going to stay motivated, keep the weight under control, because that's a lot of weight. Think about it, Skip. If he was in the NBA currently, he'd be the second heaviest player behind Bobo of the Clippers.
Yeah.
Let that sink in. Mm-hmm. At 18, 400 players in the NBA, mm-hmm. he'd be the second heaviest at 18. Mm-hmm. So though that has to raise some red flags for you, Skip, a young man. I tell you, another guy that was, I don't know if he was this had to bounce like him, but Julius Peppers. Julius Peppers is 6'7", mm-hmm. about 280. Mm-hmm. Played college basketball. Didn't, you know, had a heck of a career. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame as a defensive end, but played Carolina, went to the Bears.
He's still playing.
Yeah. So that's my concern. He's shown he's going to improve. I believe he'll just get better and better over time. Can he manage his weight? If he can manage his weight, yes, Skip, he could be a star in this league.
That is a good question. So, last night was the first time I got to see him other than YouTube clips against some real competition
yes.
on a big stage on national TV. And my first thought was, is this another Charles Barkley? Because you remember the round mound of rebound,
yep.
or sound, whichever way you want to go. And I don't know how much Charles ended up weighing. Was he in the 280 range? I think
so. Yeah, by the end.
Right?
Because he probably was 250 when he first got to the league.
I'm not sure Charles was more than 6'5",
right.
but he could jump, and he was very athletic, and he had all kinds of basketball skills, and he could shoot it, obviously. But ripped? This kid is NFL ripped.
Yes.
This kid's got biceps and triceps and pecs, and he's got it all. And I know he carries a little extra weight in his midsection and his caboose.
Yeah, he got way, way more butt than Z-Bo.
He does. But, again, would he be able to make it in the NFL as a pass rusher?
Yeah, he'd be Julius Peppers.
Oh, he would be Julius Peppers. I like that analogy. He could also be a tight end, I'm pretty sure, and he would be virtually unstoppable in the red zone with that kind of explosion. Charles did not have this kind of leaping explosion.
No, no. Skip, he has a 45-inch vertical at 285.
It's ridiculous. And what caught my ear after the game was that Calipari thought what you thought. Well, he's only 6'7", and I'm not even sure he's 6'7".
Right.
They list him as such.
Right.
Yeah.
6'6½,
right.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. So Calipari said, well, I threw a 7-footer and a 6'11 kid at him, and he just, it was candy from babies. You know, like he just rises up over him.
Right.
So you know his background. In high school, he played the point. Mm-hmm. His mom was a sprinter in college, and she taught him early and well. And then he had a stepfather who played basketball at Clemson, and they taught him right. And he knows how to play basketball, and he also, he's left-handed, but he's just as good with his right hand.
That's what I was confused, Skip, because, like you said, I watched a lot of his basketball clips on YouTube, and I'm like, is he left-handed or is he right-handed?
He's both.
Because he's dunking with his right hand as easily as he does with his left hand, but if you watch him, he shoots with his left hand.
Yeah.
So clearly he's ambidextrous,
right.
amphibious, whatever.
Yeah, whichever way you say it. And if we have that clip of the game was way out of control, but he's running fast break, dropping dimes on fast breakers with two-hand bounce passes, no-look bounce passes. Look at this. This is just sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, that's yeah. look, you yeah. can't teach
no,
that.
No, no.
You know, it's just hard for you to be that big and that powerful and be able to do that. So, again, to me, I'm seeing a perennial all-star. Mm-hmm. But more important, the team that gets him is going to have a chance to win multiple championships because that's winning basketball. That's unstoppable, but winning basketball because he's going to share the ball and he's going to pass the basketball and make the right play at the right time.
We talk about how big LeBron James is. Mm-hmm. The dude is 15, 20 pounds heavier than LeBron.
Yeah.
Let that sink, and he's 18.
18.
Skip.
18 years old.
Yeah.
We've never seen anything like this.
I've never said this is the next evolution of basketball, and it's almost like football basketball, but he's highly skilled at basketball.
Right.
That's almost like an unfair combination. Right. So also what caught my eye was the box score, because that other kid, R.J. Barrett from Toronto.
He's probably going to be the first pick in the draft.
He might be, but he's got the selfish gene in him because he's just going to shoot.
Oh, he's shooting.
He's going to shoot. So look, he took 26 shots last night. Zion took 13 shots. So he took twice as many shots, and he scored a bunch more. He played 32 to 23. I'm sorry, those are minutes. 33-28 on points. But Zion's going to score highly efficient points.
Right.
And over time in the NBA, he'll average 5 or 6 assists because he's capable of it.
Well, Zion got in foul trouble early. Yeah. Had he not gotten foul trouble, he might have got 40.
He might have. So will R.J. Barrett be good in pro basketball? I think he'll be good, but I don't think he'll be like perennial all-star great because he's also 6'7". So he's just kind of that middle range guy.
But we've seen 6'7 guys like R.J. Barrett.
Okay.
We haven't seen guys like Zion Williamson.
We have not because he's got 7-foot wingspan, which it's like freakish body parts put together. and his strength and explosion is off the charts.
Yeah.
Where like LeBron, even now, he's still a man among boys a lot of nights where he's just so much stronger than everybody else. But against Zion, like if they're matched up in the post, I don't think LeBron's pushing him around.
He got too much backside.
Right.
I mean, Z-Bo probably could jump this high on a trampoline, but this dude up off the floor, Skip, and he quit with it. Whew. You find very few big guys that's quick. The thing that separated Charles, Skip, because he was so undersized, Charles was a quick leaper.
He was.
So he could lead the floor and be back on the floor and back up again.
Right.
This kid has that kind of bounce.
Yeah, and nobody ever accused Charles of being a great passer because he just didn't care about it,
no.
Which is why he didn't make an Olympic team with Bobby Knight as the head coach.
Right.
Bobby just didn't really love his game
right.
in general.
Or a workaholic.
Now, there you go.
So, but if this kid, now, if he can, that's the question now, because, you know, there's big kids grow up to be big young men
mm-hmm.
and big old men. So the question is,
you're right.
Can he control that?
Yeah. And I don't know what his diet is. I don't know if he could lean out.
Man, he's 18 years old. Burgers, fries, tacos, Doritos, fried chicken, whatever they serve in the training hall.
Okay, but to your point, that cannot rise
no.
in pro basketball.
No.
That cannot go up because your knees can take only so much.
Yes.
And if you're 300 and you're jumping that high and coming down that hard.
That many times a night.
Oh.
They ain't got enough ice baths.
They don't.
To take the pressure off those knees.
And you're not born with enough knee cartilage to protect
that, to
keep bone from getting to bone.
Yeah, I mean, when I was 18, O'Shea, yeah, I could eat anything.
Yeah,
anything
but
anything is started, it would
fell right off.
Shredded like newspaper.
But could you jump like this?
No, I'm probably about 38 and a half, 39. I ain't had no 45. But I jumped as high as I wanted to.
Did you?
Yeah. I was flushing on folks. I was getting my head, oh.
Anybody recruit you to play college basketball?
I had a few offers. You know, I had a few offers. Not too
many. Offers, just a
but
few.
The thing was, actually, I was a better basketball in track than I was in football.
Yeah.
I only got one trophy in football.
Really?
My senior year, I was the MVP of the team. But basketball and track and field, you know.
Yeah.
Threw that thing on the rig.
You got a lot of maybe Savannah City State.
No,
basketball.
Skip, you know I was. Yeah. Skip, you know I was Prop 48.
Yeah.
Well, my grades, I couldn't have got in prison, Jenny.
Oof. Boy.
Yeah, they were bad, Jenny.
Not
I
good.
Needed a crane to pull them. Up.
I think you could have gotten in prison.
Come along.
No. My grades, they said, we ain't taking you. Your GPA too low.
You ended up with plenty of trophies, though.
Yeah, I got a few of them old Lombardis. Got a few Lombardis.
Yeah.
Oh.
Terrell Davis.
Don't do that, Skip.
Ray Lewis.
I think TD and John, that my guys will say, you know, I don't think we could have done it without O'Shea.
Really?
Nah.
I've never heard that from anyone.
Yeah, you heard that?
No.
Well, I'm going to have to get them on here
That'd
to tell you.
News to
That'd
me.
That'd be nice. Get them on here.
No mercy.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Monday for another week of Undisputed. We'll see you then.
Facts. Sports. One. Of one.
Of one.